If you love hip hop, you will love this podcast. Cue the hip hop. Playing a little music there from the documentary And I Danced. And my guests today are, gentlemen, I'm going to have you introduce yourselves. Christopher.
Well, you just did. Christopher Martin, better known as Play from the rap and acting duo Kid and Play.
Kid and
it's
Play.
Nice to be here.
You're taking me back to my childhood.
Yeah. Oh, it was like a couple of years ago.
It was. Yeah, it was. Okay, and Mark?
Hi, I'm Mark Hawkins, also known as DJ Clientele.
You're just going to leave it at that, huh?
Oh, you mean, you know, world-class wrecking crew, Dr. Dre, Ice Cube, DJ Yella, all those guys, Eazy-E. You know, that's my family.
Just name-dropping here.
I mean, you know.
I love it. Okay, so I am thrilled to talk with you guys about hip-hop because you guys are doing some really neat things.
Yes.
So, Mark, you and I have talked before.
Absolutely.
But we're going to talk about what you're currently doing, which is the documentary and speaking at colleges. Mm-hmm. All right, Christopher. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a project or a vision I've been, no disrespect to women who go through this physically, but what I've been pregnant with for well over, like, in the making, 7-8 years now. And it's just something that I felt needed to be done in regards to just celebrating, acknowledging, and paying tribute to a great group of people and a community that don't really get the recognition that they're due. And they are the dancers, the background dancers, to be more specific, those that make the music videos interesting, make the live performances dynamic. And just to know the names and just know the stories that can be very inspirational in regards to how they even got to that place. And then to work from low budget, no budget, now considered hip-hop classic music videos, to go on and dance for Prince, Michael Jackson, Whitney Houston, and Bobby Brown, and the list goes on.
So that's what that's about. Big.
Yeah, so it's from hip-hop to the top, you know.
For the record, I wanted to be one of them.
Yeah.
I think many people say that. And Mark, what I love about what you're doing is you're really trying to put hip-hop on the map for everybody to see in a museum.
Absolutely.
Talk about that.
Yeah, the Universal Hip-Hop Museum is a museum, and again, the word universal is very important and key because, like you say, it's a museum for everybody. And the goal is to make sure that everyone, all generations from the inception of hip hop till now, really get a good sense of what hip hop is, what it can be, and what it will be. So that's what we're doing.
Unfortunately, that's going to be in New York.
Yes. That's the birthplace. You know, we recognize that in the Bronx. Mm-hmm. However, we will have some satellite campuses, but at the same time, we'll have access online for people who can't really travel there. But it will be a premier destination, you know, for those who are hip hoppers from around the world. In fact, we just opened up the Revolution of Hip Hop, which is sort of a small taste of it, just across the street from where the actual museum is going to be built. Yeah. And it's opened up to rave reviews, and the visitations are off the roof, and people are just loving even that little taste of it. So we know the museum itself is going to be really successful.
And so you're, of course, representing Compton.
Yes,
in
I'm
New York,
representing the West Coast, and
got it.
You know, representing for all the people on the West Coast.
And we should note that you have a book, DJ Clientele, the autobiography, Essays and Writings of a Modern Day Renaissance Man.
Yes.
So if you want to read about hip hop, in your words, the book is out already?
Yes, it's out, and it's available on Amazon.com and also on my website, too.
I'm flipping through, recognizing some names. Dr. Dre, N.W.A.,
yes.
Okay, yeah, Ice Cube. All right, and then the documentary. What's the status of the documentary?
I'm sorry, come again?
Where is the documentary, if people want to see it?
Oh, well, right now I'm doing advanced screenings. I'm going to have some pretty good, exciting surprise news in a couple of months, but we've been on, I guess, what you call a glorified advanced screening situation. Mm-hmm. I kind of look at it as a glorified focus groups and stuff to just see if I'm hitting the right buttons in regards to laughter and seriousness and messages and inspiration and things of that nature. So I've been here for a full week, and we've done Santa Monica College, USC, the LA
Northridge.
Film School is tomorrow, a matter of fact, at 2:30 at the LA Film School on Sunset. I think it's 6363 Sunset Boulevard.
Because you don't live here.
No, I don't. I come here and, you know, get a little taste of from time to time and keep it moving. They say it's hard to hit a moving target, so I always keep it moving.
And you're from back east?
Yeah, New York. Yeah. New York is where my home and stuff is from. But my partner in crime, Kid, he He's out here. He lives out here. He's been okay. here for years now. Yeah. But we're in different places. I think it's important for the grassroots to take place of this, to spread the history of this with the students. I don't like calling them kids, but with students. And I've been very impressed and inspired by the reception of it. They're, you know, very intrigued. And it's like a world that they weren't aware of. And just to see how they take to it just lets me know I'm going in the right direction.
And there are, but there are a lot of the featured dancers that are from here. You know, they live out here. Auntie Angel is one.
She's sitting here with us.
Yeah,
we're going to bring her on just a few minutes.
Well, y'all mentioned NWA, so that's where I met her, was on the NWA tour, because a lot of people don't know, or maybe they do. Like when you saw the movie Straight Outta Compton, that tour that they won, that was with Kid and Play. And,
oh,
you know,
my gosh.
Public Enemy and stuff. So,
really?
Yeah, so that was... great to be a part of that kind of history in the making. But we have other dancers as well, and I just thought it was only right because I got a lot of love for the Soul Brothers, and they used to dance with Def Jeff, and it's just so many Heart and Soul. Straight Ahead to dance with Belle Biv DeVoe. Heart and Soul dance with Bobby Brown, and I know I'm leaving people out. Oliver, who danced with Madonna, and Omar to dance with Janet Jackson, and they started with us. And the history is deep. It's deep.
I love it.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking you're introducing your music to a whole new generation of these young kids when you go to colleges, yeah?
Yeah. I'm sorry, go ahead.
The main purpose, again, like I said, is for the generations that did not get a chance to experience the music and the culture and just the spirit of all of the things that had happened in the beginnings of hip-hop till now, they get a chance to do that. You know, and they get to see it through dance, through the documentary, and you can see just the faces of people. And when they're sitting in the seats and they start moving, when the music comes on and you see the dancers, you can tell that clearly is resonating with
people. Oh, yeah. And the music.
Well, metaphorically, look at it like a great tree that's been in your neighborhood forever. This tree has got like people's couples' names on it. You climbed it. You enjoyed the fruits and stuff that came from it. But nobody took the chance to say, how did that tree get there? What's the roots? Mm-hmm. So that's what we do. You know, but you don't know generations now to just assume hip hop has always been here, but never take the time out to think, you know what, how did this get started? There was a time when it wasn't even called hip hop, you know, and that was a great time in hip hop when it wasn't called hip hop. So just to know that stuff is a beautiful thing to see their eyes light up, you know.
Let's talk about some of your early years.
How much time do you got?
Yeah. Podcast is about 45 minutes.
No, I'm just messing with you.
But let's go back for a minute because I want to know how old you were when you really realized, oh my gosh, we're doing something pretty big here. Mark, start me out.
Well, I was about 14 years old.
14.
And yeah, we were on the school, you know, football field playing soccer.
And what year was this?
Man, this was about 79, 80 maybe, okay. Something like that. And we heard, you know, in L.A., California, you know, cars used to bump their sounds and you'd have the big, you know, booming bass. And we heard this car go by, they bust a right, and we heard this boom, 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 boom. And we just froze, right? And then all of a sudden you hear this, I said a hip hop, the hip into the, and it's like, whoa, what is that? And it was like, yo, that sounds so good. What is that song? What is that record? So... found out what the name was, went to the record store, bought it, listened to it a couple of times, learned all the lyrics right away, and yeah, I was hooked on hip-hop ever since.
Do I have this right? Sugar Hill Gang?
Yes.
Okay.
Sugar Hill Gang, that's right.
Yeah.
That's
How fun is that? So talk about your, Christopher, where were you when you realized, like, this is what I want to do?
Well, you know, my roots go, back to the word roots again, go deeper than that, because I was actually fortunate enough to actually witness the birth of it, because it really just came out of dire desperation, what was going on in New York at the time in the 70s with the whole financial crisis that was going on, and how President Ford at the time didn't want to bail New York out of a financial crisis. So they took the arts out of the schools and they removed the after school programs and stuff.
Okay,
so,
you asked me how long we had. Wow.
Well, as I said, I was tired to have. So I'm fortunate enough to actually see that organic metamorphosis, I always want to say that word, take place. And so, you know, and even when Clientele speaks of Rapper's Delight, for me, and I'm sure it was for y'all too as well, I could see that it was the disco era. Mm-hmm. And the hit record was Good Times by Chic.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And it's in the documentary where another great dancer by the name of Stretch Buddha talks about the fact of how we were it kind of caught us all by surprise because we thought we knew every rapper and stuff going on. And here's this record where somebody put rap to this already hit record, Good Times, that it was already paved the way for it to be a hit because that record was a hit. So to add rap to it just added an extra bump to it. And then now, you know, it reaches places and people like clientele. So that was how that whole thing came together. You know, disco doesn't always get the credit because we didn't know how to play.
I love disco.
Yeah, we didn't know how to play instruments. So we used what we had as far as the records and using the break beats of the Get Down part to be able to rap over those parts, those Afrocentric beats and other hit records to get people's attention in the party. Because if you did something that was foreign, people were going to stop dancing and don't react to it because this, what is this? But if you already had a record that was a hit on the radio and you're rapping over it, now you do like a Trojan horse type thing in there.
This is so good.
Yeah.
This is so good. Yeah. All right, so Kid and Play, how much fun was that?
None at all. No,
Come on.
I mean, it's work, but no, it was fun. I mean, our thing, I believe then and now, that's what resonated. We just was kind of like a metaphoric, I know I'm saying that wrong, way of people having fun and representing fun and recreating and doing what you do when you have fun at the parties, the antics, the dancing, going after girls, girls going after guys, all of that kind of stuff. Because everybody could relate to a house party. When it got to a movie thing, but in our music videos prior to that, we just was antics and fun and acting, you know, just what we do when we could, you know, when nobody's watching, but the cameras is on.
And clientele, you were young.
Yeah.
You were a young singer.
Yeah.
Yeah. What were mom and dad thinking when you were out there on the road?
Well, they weren't that happy about it. But at the same time, I think when my mother finally came to one of my shows, she was like, oh, okay, now I see why he's doing this. But, you know, she always knew that I was sort of a little bit more responsible. And she's always said that I had an old soul. So even growing up, she would trust me to go places. I would catch the bus when I was 9 and 10 years old to downtown L.A. and, you know, to my grandmother's house and do all kind of stuff like that. And she knew I'd come back. That wasn't an issue. But, you know, you hear the horror stories about the industry and what goes on and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I was just savvy enough to maneuver through all of that stuff. But, yeah, when she first finally came to one of my concerts and said, oh, okay.
Okay.
No, he's all right.
It's kind of fun.
He's all right. Yeah.
Well, for Fox 11 News, we interviewed you, and I love this old footage of you with Dr. Dre there.
Yeah.
That old footage is just great. Then he went on to go to NWA.
Yes.
So now, where we're at now, what is it what are you trying to do with your message? What is it you want from this?
Well, for me, I think it's important, again, that other generations understand the legacy of hip hop, not just me personally, but just what hip hop has done for so many people in so many communities. Because, like, you know, Play was saying, that hip hop was born out of the oppressive conditions of Black and Latino and you know, downtrodden youth. And it has gone through many different iterations, and it has evolved into what some would say that it's something that's further away from the original core tenets. You know, I mean, you see pockets of folks still representing, like the Kendrick Lamars and J. Cole's and those guys. But for the most part, you know, I always tell people they have to distinguish between the rap industry and hip hop culture. Hip hop culture is still there. It's robust. It's thriving. The rap industry changes constantly, and it's profit driven. It's driven by, you know, money and that kind of stuff. But what we want, at least for me, is the youth today to really understand the core values of hip hop and what it can do to change lives like it has changed so many of our lives.
Wow. I see why you guys are at the colleges.
You expect me to follow that, huh?
You are, I mean, this is education. It's not just art, it's education.
Well, for me, you know, I guess I got another term for it, edutainment. You know, I love documentaries. I'm pretty much can be obsessed with them. I just of the belief as well that anything that's going to take up, let's say, at least an hour of your life to watch something, I don't think you should be the same person you were before that hour, after the hour. Mm-hmm. So if you can be entertained by it and still something has you know, changed you or something has enlightened you. I like that word better. Mm-hmm. That's what it's about. But for me, in part, it's also a diving board for me, if time and permits, to speak about, you know, how hip, how God, my accountant, my lawyer, my agent and manager, Jesus Christ, how he used hip hop to save my life. Because for me, I got kicked out of 5 high schools and I was doing some things. My agenda wasn't angelic, you know. So for me, when I was introduced to it or to see the birth of it, you know, it ended up being something that helped save my life. Because my father at the time, you know, my grandfather, who was an alcoholic, we'd be driving like 4 or 5 hours on a way to visit my father in prison, and I'm praying that my grandfather wouldn't fall asleep behind the wheel of a car, and here I'm going to see my father, who is my best friend now, and he's a pastor and minister now, so I want to have that on a good note. But anyway, so a lot of stuff was going on, and when I'm looking at black exploitation films, and I'm seeing the cars that my father was driving, the clothes he was whatever, I'm like, okay, that's what I'm supposed to be, is what I saw in those movies and saw in the streets. And, you know, thank God for But God. So for me, when I show these things and capture the interest through the music and the imagery and stuff, and a lot of us in this have very similar testimonies, and to be able to share that so that the students, kids, can see that you're not alone.
Yes.
We can, our lives are very relatable, and if we made it, we know you can make it.
Right.
So we plant those seeds through the Trojan horse method of hip hop. So that's what I.
And Clientel, how'd you two meet?
I just met him in the parking lot when we just.
No, that's not true.
And, you know, we're about to throw
true.
Down.
A gentleman, a great gentleman by the name of Rocky. I'm afraid to say his last name. I want to put you in Bucano. He's a great friend of mine and his.
Yeah.
He's the visionary of the Universal Hip Hop Museum. Mm-hmm. And when I had an incredible showing at the Museum of Moving Image in New York, he was like, yo, we need to get this out. And he says, let me just make a phone call. And that gentleman was Clientel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, really? You didn't know each other earlier?
No.
No.
Well, you know,
gosh.
When you, it's a faith walk, you know, our footsteps are ordered. So, you know, it's not supposed to make sense. It's supposed to make faith, you know.
And but, you know, we've since become family, you know. I mean, Christopher already knows that, you know, anything he needs is, you know, out here on the West Coast, he got it.
Okay. We have two other guests. Should we bring them in on the mic
here?
Yes,
please do.
You come with an entourage, right?
That's how hip-hop
does. Hi, Audie. My friend Audie messaged me on Instagram and says that we're coming down.
Yes.
Audie, you're in the documentary.
I am, and I'm so honored to be here. I'm just listening to my brothers. These are my brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, wow, I'm fangirling right now, to be honest.
Right.
I know
they're something, aren't they?
They are.
Yes.
And what they built, this legacy, is so phenomenal.
Talk about your legacy with dance.
My legacy of dance started with NWA, Eazy-E and NWA.
I did not know.
Really?
I've known you all these years. No, I don't fully know your story, which is why I love the podcast.
And I did not know that you wanted to be a dancer.
Yep.
So
sounds like a making of a group right now.
That's right.
Right? Let's go. We have the looks. Let's
My
go.
Birth father was a dancer in Brazil.
Really?
So it's in the blood.
Wow.
Yes.
Okay, go on.
That's cool.
So I ended up on tour with Eazy-E and NWA, and there I met Kid and Play, and they invited me. Once we got off tour, they invited me to dance in their videos. But what I love about what Christopher Play is doing, he's such a phenomenal storyteller that I actually got to see the documentary for the first time. I was so moved. I know my own story, but I was moved to tears the way he told the story.
How so?
The way he manipulated the clips, I don't like to say manipulated, but formulated the clips to make sense, and the way they tell the story makes more sense than I even understood when it happened to me.
Yeah. Well, it's nice to go back and look at it from this perspective and think, wow, we did this. And Play, I'll tell you, my husband is a rock musician, so I have been on a tour and I felt the music where you feel it in your heart and your bones. And I have looked out at the audience and said, wow, I see why artists do what they do. For dancers, what has the world of hip hop done for dancers?
It was interesting because one of my other missions and what is like a sub message in this is for women, young ladies, to see you don't have to forfeit what your parents prayerfully put in your lives, your morals and your values for fame and attention. And every one of these women in here, they all are great parents, entrepreneurs, community leaders, the list goes on. And just to talk about what they did then and what they become now, and no one is ashamed or, you know, had to sacrifice their morals for attention or for fame. And I really hope that comes across. I don't bring that up right away because I don't want to come across preaching. I want to kind of get it in there. And I'm sure that it's accomplishing that. But the fact that, you know, another thing I also say that I didn't have to get permission or get what find any way to have to go to any jail or rehabilitation center to be able to interview any of these dancers. They're all doing well.
How'd you pick Adi for the documentary?
Oh, that was, she was like one of the top five, like right off the bat. Because her story is amazing. You know, her story is, well, you didn't call me, I called you. I saw you. But because her story is just amazing. And she was doing this television reality show. What was it called?
Push Girls.
Push Girls, yeah, with her and three others alike in the similar situations and stuff. So I just knew that it was important to have her in there.
And because we are audio, let's paint the picture, because, Adi, I just love your story, too. I know a little bit about your story. You are in a beautiful,
blinged out, 25-inch rims, wow.
custom made,
wheel stuck to this rear end, yes.
Okay, and Push Girls is?
A reality-based show that was on the Sundance Channel, and we actually got awarded the Critics' Choice Award for Best Reality.
So do you call it a wheelchair? What do you
I call it Miss Thang.
Okay.
Miss Thang, she does her own thing.
Yes,
it's a chariot. My own throne. Girls that were on Push Girls, we call it our throne because we are all queens roaming this earth. I wanted to say that being a part of this documentary means so much to us as dancers in the community itself, being able to share where the history comes from, where we are able to evolve it to. And talking about evolving, I'm mentioning this because I was able to pioneer wheelchair hip-hop dance.
I love it. I love when I see your clips on Instagram. What is your Instagram name?
Auti Angel, all one word, A-U-T as in Tom, I-A-N-G-E-L.
What I love about it is that you represent even in a wheelchair. You don't stop dancing. Yeah.
Well, the word for me, you know, perseverance, you know, and the fact that, you know, this ministry is going to be a series after the actual documentary is available to everyone. And as we move on to see what everyone has done and been up, that's what's called And I Danced. The reason why it's past tense, because I do this now, I do this, and I do this. And you know what? By the way, I danced. You know, so with her, this amazing, this part of her story in the series is how she, I was amazed, I was at her home, and she's putting a young girl who does walk, but in a wheelchair. And that day, she had to operate in the wheelchair, learn how to. And it's a message in it, you know, and that's amazing. So
I call it Auntie Angel's Field Trip.
Right, exactly. Okay. So I had the blessing and the honor to be able to film that. I'm looking forward to when that, you know, is seen for people to see that it's more than her just dancing is what she does, you know, off the field. You know,
Clientele, how much fun are you having being part of this project and this journey and bringing it to students?
I'm loving it because it is providing so much rich and so well-needed information, not only to kids, but also to adults.
I'm learning a lot.
Well, with the adults, they're reliving, you know, their childhood or their teenage years or the days when they used to party and go to clubs and watch the music videos and that kind of thing. But with kids, they're getting a brand new sort of insight into the whole world of dance. And the other thing I want to say that is so important, what Christopher's doing, is he is highlighting the dancers that you see but you don't know their names, or you see and then you kind of go in the back of your head, yeah, that's cool, but the, you know, I'm really focused on the artist. But the way he's telling the story, you're focused on the dancers and you're seeing them, for me anyway, in a whole new light. Oh yeah, that is the guy that did this, that is the group of dancers that did that. And it's so fascinating to hear that story, you know, being told by them. and you go, okay, that's how they got started. That's why they did what they did. And you realize how hard they worked to make that one scene or that one video or that one stage act so well done.
I want to share my brief treat today and compliments of my new good friend, Professor Tim.
We're going to bring Tim on the mic.
Professor Conley. But what I want to say that took place for me today, because this thing is a treat, but also in this documentary, we have original Soul Train dancers. And all, like 99% of the dancers in the interviews all refer to that was their inspiration, was watching Soul Train and one day being on that. So today when we were at the Rise School in here in L.A., I had the opportunity, because I'm still in production, and I met at one of the screenings Thelma Davis, who is an original Soul Train dancer. She was one of the original dancers that they auditioned and picked before the show even began. So for him to help me arrange to do that after a screening we had with some, I guess we call them some, not troubled youth, but youth that are dealing with their challenges in their life, that to have that after. So, you know, that, today was a real, every day is a good day, but today was an exceptional good day, because for me, there are people that are my heroes. And I remember when I was at home watching Saturday morning had to be Soul Train, you know.
Well, I don't know my birth father, but I'm told he was on like a Soul Train in Brazil.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. Wow. Okay, so our next guest, Tim, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Well, I'm happy to be here. Tim Conley. I am a Los Angeles-based filmmaker, documentarian, hip-hop historian, music historian.
Hip-hop historian.
Yes.
Stop. I love that. Hip-hop historian.
Right now, I'm doing it through the documentary filmmaking. So I'm actually, clientele is actually in my film that's in post-production with his group member, Alonzo Williams, Grandmaster Alonzo. The film is called Not Without Alonzo, but it's NWA, Not Without Alonzo.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, how cute is that? All right, so Tim, your last name is Conley.
That's correct.
And you're also a professor.
I am a professor. I currently teach at the Los Angeles Film School and at Santa Monica College.
What do you teach?
I teach film and media studies, and when I can squeeze it in, hip-hop. So
I love that. Yeah. And so you're part of the whole meeting at the colleges?
Yeah, so clientele reached out to me and said, hey, I want to introduce you to Christopher Play Martin. He's got a documentary film. I was like, I know who Christopher Play Martin is. I'm a fan.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
So I was excited as I grew up a hip-hop head. And so we met and we started meeting and we decided, you know, we'll try to get it on one campus. And the original campus was USC, where I was working at the time. And we sort of branched out and I reached out to all my contacts, and so we got it on a few different campuses this week, and it's been really exciting. In fact, the president of Santa Monica College, who doesn't always come out to events, came out to this event, and she was really impressed with the film.
Very
so
impressed.
We're super excited about what this film is doing, and I'm really excited because as a instructor, I'm always looking for practical ways to share information and knowledge and education with students. It's one thing for them to hear it from me, but to hear it from the folks who were involved in the movement and the history has been really exciting for us. Yeah.
Is there a question that you got from the kids that stood out to you?
That's one of the things that lets you know, like everywhere I show this, and in particular with this trip, you know, I look out to the audience to see the reactions, to see the facial expressions. And to much to my pleasant surprise, you don't see anybody with their head buried in their mobile device. Everybody's thing is transfixed on this screen, and which means a lot. But as far as their questions, yeah, they give very, very insightful, well articulated questions. I'm impressed with their maturity and all of that. But questions such as, how long did it take to do this? What can I do to be able to be a rapper or filmmaker? Things, questions, and stuff like that. The norms, but in a very, very word escapes me right now, but in a very sincere way.
Yeah,
they're very sincere.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that you're both telling your story in different ways.
Right.
Clientele, you've got a book.
Yes.
Yeah. So, what is the message of your book?
Well, what I wanted to do with the book, I wanted to set the historical record straight, because you hear a lot or read a lot of information that's maybe partially there or just completely misinterpreted or just flat out wrong. So at some point, you realize, okay, it's time to really frame the narrative correctly. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to really sit down and go, well, let me go back over the decades that I've been, you know, doing this and really tell the story and leave somewhat of a legacy that would represent, again, the narrative well. And part of that, too, I was motivated by, of course, the Straight Outta Compton movie and a conversation I had with Ice Cube. And we were on the set, and I said, man, you know, thanks for doing this movie. And he said, well, you know, man, the real reason why I'm doing this is because I want everyone else to tell their stories. And I sat back and I said, you know what? You're right. And that's when I immediately started. I had notes, you know, kind of laying around here and there. And that's when I immediately started going back, you know, and replaying the movie in my head and saying, okay, this happened, this happened, this happened, and start pinning it. So, yeah, it was mainly motivated out of that conversation, but also out of just wanting to make sure, you know, the historical record was correct.
Okay, so when I interviewed Ice Cube, he was getting an award from, I think it was a homeless agency helping families get up off the streets, and he was their honoree at the red carpet. And I said, would you ever thought that you would be here getting this city honor, this big community honor? I said, what would you say to your younger self or to some people who questioned you as you were growing up? And he said, don't judge a book by its cover.
Yeah.
So to tell the story is so important. Tim, let me ask you this. For the kids to hear the stories and the work that went into doing hip-hop and living hip-hop, what does it mean for them that you see?
Well, what I'm excited about is a lot of my students come from troubled backgrounds. And they're not just, you know, you think Santa Monica College, we assume that everybody's from a fortunate background, but some of them have challenged backgrounds. And for them to see individuals who look like them and represent what they represent, who have found success and may have had some challenges in life. And so they give them practical information, but give them real life information. And so it takes them from being just this celebrity that you see on the screen to someone who's a real person. They're just like me. And that's what I love. For example, the other day when I was watching the Kobe Bryant memorial, I think his wife really,
Vanessa,
she really humanized Kobe for everyone.
Yeah.
You see Kobe, and I got a chance to work with Kobe, and I saw him in a different light. But I think the same thing here when we bring these individuals to campus, and they get to ask the questions of somebody who's been in the business. And it's just, I wish that would have been around when I was in school. Then none of that was made available. And so I really pushed to bring individuals to campus so that they can have those chances for engagement.
You know, I love, too, the message. You know, even with my job being a newscaster and play, I've been here a long time in L.A., but I always wonder, what will I do after this for me, whether it's the day they don't renew the contract or I want to do something else or some other offer comes along? What else can I do? Who else will I be? And you are proof that you can be on the mic one day, you can be making a film the next day, you can be on a stage one day, you can be in a classroom the next day. I love that it shows there's more to life than just being on the stage with the crowd cheering in front of you.
Absolutely. And I think to add to that, even though some kids or students or people may have that desire early on to be the rapper or the dancer,
or in your case, the singer.
Right. Or this, there are other jobs as well in entertainment that they can do that are all a part of it. They can be the business manager.
I always say that.
Business lawyer. They can be, you know, the stage manager. They can be the marketing, you know, director. There are so many different opportunities in the entertainment business that it's important to really explore all options and not think of it as, you know, so myopic or, you know, one lane, but and not try to be a one-trick pony.
Play, did you ever have trouble transitioning from being in the limelight to, you know, you're behind the scenes working on a documentary, right?
Well, you know, right now for me, I guess the perfect word is transitioning, you know, because Kid and I were still doing a lot of stuff. You know, we just finished a couple of tours with Salt-N-Pepa and a whole host of other artists, and then we just finished up the Hammer tour, and then we've just been 8 days out at sea. So now I'm on a little bit of a break till our next tour, which is a Pajama Jam tour that we're on this year.
Okay, I want to be your groupie.
Right.
I want to be your groupie on those tours.
The thing for me is I am very much looking forward to the point, as I look at my life as a stage play, all our lives, you know, we have Act 1, Act 2, we have intermission, now it's time for Act 3 and Act 4. Well, I'm somewhat coming out of intermission due to some health issues. I dealt with a very serious situation with my eye, and it took some time for some healing, but I saw that the Lord was just really taking that time to give me a new eye insight. And now when this that healing in the physical is over, and here we are, now it's time for Act Three. And then for me now, it's like, as I tell people, I'm enjoying the fruits of my labor. Now, when you say a phrase like that, people might think, okay, you want to take your money and stuff and buy cars and do this and that. And it could be that too. But for me, I really enjoy cinematography. I have like a real passion for it. So that would be the fruit of my labor, is to be able to be taken seriously in that lane, be successful. But I'm not really looking for millions and thousands of likes on Instagram and all of that stuff. I'm not even a big social media person. But if you're a cook, for instance, and you make something that you're really proud of and you enjoy eating, now you want to share it with people that you love and your friends and hope they enjoy it too. But if they don't enjoy it, it doesn't mean you don't like it anymore, but you were just trying to share something you like. So that's the way I look at my work. So I'm doing it because it's something in me that, as I said before, being pregnant with, I want to share, but now enjoy my child, and hopefully you will.
Love it.
Yeah, somebody may have mentioned this to me once, or I read it. I can't remember, but it was one real friend is worth more than 1,000 fake friends, or something like that.
I know the saying.
Yeah, but just to add to, you know, what Play is saying, you know, transitioning from sort of one thing to the next, it's sort of a continuum. You know, and I believe it's more like, you know, collecting pieces of yourself along the way, just picking them up and putting them in your basket and keeping them moving. And ironically, all of us here are filmmakers. You know, we're editors. We are, you know, cinematographers. We're directors. We're writers. All of us here. So, you know, it's just creatively, you just fall from one creative medium to the next, and you just keep it pushing.
I'm going to ask you all to give me a final thought in a second, but we'll go to Tim first, and Audie will get you back on the mic too. So, Tim, as you've watched this process where we're hearing about Clientele's book and we're hearing about Play's documentary, where do we stand with hip-hop right now in America?
I think the culture stands great. I think the hip-hop music business needs some work, and the reason that I want these pioneers to engage with young people is so that they can inspire them to be more creative and to sort of create those lanes that used to exist. You had the fun music. You had the more serious content around maybe socio-political topics. You had all types of variety of content. And you had hip-hop that was the CNN of the streets, as Chuck D says it. So I am hoping that we can create that new CNN of the streets that is representing more than this sort of this fanatization of what we see in hip hop, sort of making the neighborhood look like this glorified Disneyland in the ghetto, which it is not, and sort of telling the truth about what's going on and what needs to change to uplift communities and uplift people. And one way I think that I'm going to be doing that personally is I'm going to be working with DJ Clientele here on a new podcast show, The Politics of Hip-Hop Culture.
Oh, I love it.
And we're actually engaging students at Santa Monica College in our Center for Media and Design. They're going to do all the audio production on the show. So we're engaging students to get practical experience working with folks in the business.
Okay, Audie, why don't you grab the mic there? And I'd love for you to give me just whatever thought you want to put out there.
Well, I wasn't always in a wheelchair. As you know, I danced with Eazy-E, N.W.A., Kid & Play, LL Cool J. Actually, I danced with LL Cool J on the Grammys in 1992, and that was the last time I danced on two legs. Hip-hop has given me life to be able to continue doing what I love doing, which is dance, without the use of my legs. So I encourage anybody that's listening right now, never give up on your dreams, no matter what obstacle you may face or challenge that may come your way that seems so devastating that you're just drowning in it. You will always come up for air. You can breathe. As long as you have breath in your lungs and a heartbeat, artificial or not, you still have purpose. And my purpose was to share my gift of dance and to create a legacy for other young ladies in wheelchairs now get to look up and say, I'm kind of like the Janet Jackson of the the wheelchair kids, but it just being able to pass that along for even them to tell their stories through hip hop is such an honor. And I love my boys. Thank you for letting me be a part of your lives.
Oh, she's just a sweetheart, isn't she?
No doubt.
Just a sweetheart. All right, Play, go ahead. Give me any final thought that you want.
I just feel very strongly led to say to someone or someones, don't quit. Don't quit. And I'll try this. The middleman rides the train. The rich man takes the plane. The poor man walks the railroad track and gets there just the same.
Oh, that is beautiful. That is beautiful. Thank you so much for coming. And I loved how we started out. I was the news lady, all former Christopher, and now I'm calling you Play. Yeah. That's okay.
No, I like
way.
Christopher. I mean, yeah. I love it. I prefer that. Sometimes people say Chris. I think we spoke about the one time when you said Chris. I said I prefer Christopher.
Is that Chris?
But, yeah.
Okay.
No, but I usually say when it used to account, I say you could call me anything but collect.
Oh, that's hilarious. Hilarious. Okay, and clientele, because you're my friend here and we go way back, I'm going to let you bring us home here with a final thought.
Wow. And because I'm wearing his shirt, too.
Are wearing a Kobe Bryant shirt. Yes.
I'm going to leave with this from him. He said, there are no winners or losers, only choosers. And it's important that whatever you do in life, choose well and choose up. Mm. So I'll leave with that.
You know, I'm also doing a series on Kobe Bryant. It's called Voices of the People, Kobe Bryant Remembered.
Yes.
And I'm just talking to people about how Kobe touched them, because everyone's story is so different as to why you are moved by his death. And I've had everyone from people expressing their grief through the arts to people who've who've experienced their own personal grief. And you guys could have been on that podcast just as easy as you're on the Olympic and Bundy podcast. So let me think of where I'm going to put this here. But thank you for coming down. We appreciate it very much and continue to tell your stories.
Thank you.
Respect. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Salute.